Always just to laugh when she said it. She always laughed so much. that I don't know how she ever came to decide on being a missionary. I'm thankful she did. I pray that she might. But I wish she hadn't. Then Aunt Jane Sooner wondered why those hippie girls all laughed. And eyes shone all that day. Literary ambitions sprouted and budded in her brain. Their exhilaration accompanied her to Jenny Cooper's walking party, and not even the sight of Gilbert and Christine walking just ahead of her and Roy could quite subdue the sparkle of her starry hopes. Nevertheless, she was not so wrapped from things of earth as to be unable to notice that Christine's walk was decidedly ungraceful. But I suppose Gilbert looks only at her face. So like a man, thought Anne scornfully. Shall you be home Saturday afternoon? Asked Roy. Yes. My mother and sisters are coming to call on you, said Roy quietly. Something went over Anne, which might be described as a thrill, but it was hardly a pleasant one. She had never met any of Roy's family. She realized the significance of his statement, and it had somehow an irrevocableness about it that chilled her. I shall be glad to see them, she said flatly, and then wondered if she really would be glad. She ought to be, of course. But would it not be something of an ordeal? Gossip had filtered to Anne regarding the light in which the gardeners viewed the infatuation of son and brother. Roy must have brought fresh air in the matter of this call. Anne knew she would be weighed in the balance. From the fact that they had consented to call, she understood that, willingly or unwillingly, they regarded her as a possible member of their clan. I shall just be myself. I shall not try to make a good impression, thought Anne loftily. But she was wondering what dress she would better wear Saturday afternoon, and if the new style of high hair dressing would suit her better than the old. And the walking party was rather spoiled for her. By night, she had decided that she would wear her brown chiffon on Saturday, but would do her hair low. Friday afternoon, none of the girls had classes at Redmond. Stella took the opportunity to write a paper for the Philomathic Society and was sitting at the table in the corner of the living room with an untidy litter of notes and manuscript on the floor around her. Stella always vowed she could never write anything unless she threw each sheet down as she completed it. Anne, in her flannel blouse and serge skirt, with her hair rather flown from her windy walk home, was sitting squarely in the middle of the floor, piecing the Sarah cat with a wishbone. Joseph and Leslie were both curled up in her lap. A warm, plummy odor filled the whole house, for Priscilla was cooking in the kitchen. Presently she came in, enshrouded in a huge work apron, with a smudge of flour her nose to show Aunt Jamesina the chocolate cake she had just iced. At this auspicious moment, the knocker sounded. Nobody paid any attention to it, save Phil, who sprang up and opened it, expecting a boy with the hat she had bought that morning. On the step stood Mrs. Gardner and her daughters, and scrambled to her feet somehow, emptying two indignant cats out of her lap as she did so, and mechanically shifting her wishbone from her right hand to her left. Priscilla, who would have had to cross the room to reach the kitchen door, lost her head, wildly plunged the chocolate cake under a cushion on the inglenook sofa, and dashed upstairs. Stella began feverishly gathering up her manuscript. Only Aunt Jamesina and Phil remained normal. Thanks to them, everybody was soon sitting at ease, even Anne. Priscilla came down apronless and smudgeless. Stella reduced her corner to decency, and Phil saved the situation by a string of ready small talk. Mrs. Gardner was tall and thin and handsome, exquisitely gowned, cordial with a cordiality that seemed a trifle forced. Aline Gardner was a younger edition of her mother, lacking the cordiality. She endeavored to be nice, but succeeded only in being haughty and patronizing. Dorothy Gardner was slim and jolly and rather tomboyish. Anne knew she was Dora's favorite sister and warm to her. She would have looked very much like Dora if she had had dreamy dark eyes instead of roguish hazel ones. Thanks to her and Phil, the call went off very well, except for a slight sense of strain in the atmosphere and two rather untoward incidents. Rusty and Joseph, left to themselves, began a game of chase and sprang madly into Mrs. Gardner's silken lap and out of it in their wild career. Mrs. Gardner lifted her lorgnette and gazed after their flying forms as if she had never seen cats before, and Anne, choking back slightly nervous laughter, apologized as best she could. "You are fond of cats," said Mrs. Gardner, with a slight intonation of tolerant wonder. And despite her affection for Rusty, was not especially fond of cats, but Mrs. Gardner's tone annoyed her. Inconsequently, she remembered that Mrs. John Blythe was so fond of cats that she kept as many as her husband would allow. "They are adorable animals, aren't they?" she said with a leer. "I have never liked cats," said Mrs. Gardner remotely. "I love them," said Dorothy. "They are so nice and selfish. Dogs are too good and unselfish. They make me feel uncomfortable. But cats are gloriously human." "You have two delightful old China dogs," violin, he continued to sit on the cushion and discuss China dogs until the time of departure. Dorothy lingered behind a moment to squeeze Han's hand and whispered impulsively, "I know you and I are going to be chums. Old Roy has told me all about you. I'm the only one of the family he tells things to, poor boy. Nobody could confide in Mama and me, you know. What glorious times you girls must have here. Won't you let me come often and have a share in them?" "Come as often as you like," Han responded heartily, thankful that one of Roy's sisters was likable. She would never like Aline, so much was certain, and Aline would never like her, though Mrs. Gardner might be one. Altogether, Han sighed with relief when the ordeal was over. But all said words of tongue or pen were said as God it might have been, quoted Priscilla tragically, lifting the cushion. "This cake is now what you might call a flat failure, and the cushion is likewise ruined. Never tell me that Friday isn't unlucky. People who send word they are coming on Saturday shouldn't come on Friday," said Aunt Jamesina. "I fancy it was Roy's mistake," said Phil. "That boy isn't really responsible for what he says when he talks to Anne. Where is Anne?" Anne had gone upstairs. She felt oddly like crying, but she made herself laugh instead. Rusty and Joseph had been